From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
As soon as you get pulled over for a speeding ticket, they're going to see that you're a deserter. Then they're going to apprehend you, take you to jail. So guess what? All that lovey-dovey, I want to go to college and all this, guess what? You just throw it out the window because you just ruined your life.
An Army recruiter threatening a Texas high school student with jail time when he expressed second thoughts about joining the military. After that conversation was broadcast, the recruiter was suspended. We'll play the conversation and speak with two of the Army recruits involved. We'll also be joined by a spokesperson for the U.S. Military Recruiting Command and a Texas Congress member who's calling for an investigation. All that and more coming up. To Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Rwanda's formally accused top French leaders of playing major roles in the 1994 genocide that killed some 800,000 people. A report from an independent Rwandan commission says French officials were instrumental in training and harboring the Hutus and then helped to cover up their crimes. The report names several senior French leaders, including former Prime Minister Dominique de Villepin and the late former President François Mitterrand. Rwanda Justice Minister Karugama Tharcisse said Rwanda will try to press charges.
This should be clear that this report is not just going to lie down, put into some store somewhere. It's a report that's going to be used. It's going to be a report that is going to help in bringing to justice, or in making attempts, very serious attempts to bring to justice people that were involved in committing genocide in this country.
France has long denied the allegations and says the report has, quote, no guarantee of independence or impartiality. Controversies surrounding the case of a U.S.-educated Pakistani woman arrested last month in Afghanistan. Afia Siddiqui appeared in a New York court Tuesday, just 2 weeks after U.S. troops shot and seized her. The FBI accuses Siddiqui of trying to open fire on several agents who'd come to question her. The FBI also says she had documents on making chemical bombs and a list of potential targets in the United States. But Afghan police give a radically different account. They say Siddiqui was shot following a misunderstanding that saw her initially asking the U.S. for help. Meanwhile, Siddiqui's family is accusing the U.S. of raping and assaulting her during her imprisonment at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. On Tuesday, Afia Siddiqui's sister, Fawzia, spoke out at a news conference in Pakistan.
This is a story of much greater significance than just my sister or one woman. Her rape and torture is a crime beyond anything she was ever accused of.
Afia Siddiqui is a neuroscientist with degrees from MIT and Brandeis University. She faces decades in prison on multiple counts of attempting to kill U.S. personnel. Texas has executed a Mexican national despite a recent order by the World Court to halt the execution. 33-year-old Jose Medellin was put to death on Tuesday on a conviction of raping and murdering two teenage girls. Last month, the International Court of Justice said Medellin and some 50 other Mexicans on death row should have new hearings in U.S. courts. Medellin's attorneys contend he was denied the protections of the Vienna Convention, which calls for people arrested to have access to their home country's consular officials. The Mexican government says it sent an official complaint to U.S. officials. New projections from U.S. government auditors show high oil prices could leave the Iraqi government with a $79 billion surplus this year. Democratic Senator Carl Levin of the Senate Armed Services Committee is leading calls for the Iraqi government to begin paying a higher share of Iraq's reconstruction costs. The U.S. has already spent more than $40 billion on Iraqi reconstruction costs, with large amounts going to private American corporations. In Israel and the occupied territories, a leading cabinet member and former Israeli army commander who once called for the mass killing of Palestinians has launched his candidacy for prime minister. Transportation Minister Shaul Mofaz enters the race to replace Prime Minister Ehud Olmert just days after reports emerge he once instructed Israeli troops to kill 70 Palestinians a day during the Second Intifada. In May 2001, Shaul Mofaz reportedly gave a briefing to senior West Bank army commanders and said he wanted 10 slain Palestinians a day in each of the 7 territorial brigade areas. On Tuesday, Mofaz emphasized he's running on a platform of security.
Everything interfaces with security, influence it, and is influenced by it. We must remember that it will be meaningless if Israel should be weak, vulnerable, and surrounded by enemies.
Mofaz recently emerged as the chief rival to Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni to take over the Kadima party following Olmert's resignation. Meanwhile, the Bush administration has revoked student visas for 3 Gaza residents who had won Fulbright scholarships to study in the United States. The awards were first withdrawn, then reinstated after the U.S. intervened in Israel's decision to bar the students from leaving. But the U.S. now says it agrees with Israel's initial decision and that the students will remain in Gaza. A new report is warning nearly half the world's primates are facing extinction because of deforestation and hunting. The International Union for Conservation of Nature says 48% of monkeys and apes face a growing danger because of eroding habitats. The London Zoo's conservation director, John Bielby, called the findings highly alarming.
The report was aiming to assess the conservation status of all primates, so I think 634 species. And the findings of the report were very, very worrying for the conservation of primates. About 48% were classified as being threatened with extinction, and that's an unprecedented rate among species and groups of species that have been assessed in the past.
The 48% figure is an increase over 5 years ago when 39% of primates were found to be at risk. The Washington Post has revealed the Bush administration could likely possess thousands of hours of secretly recorded conversations between Guantanamo prisoners and officials from their home countries. Newly disclosed documents show the U.S. told all visiting foreign delegations their meetings would be recorded. The White House has refused to acknowledge existence of any recordings. It finally confirmed holding one tape of Canadian officials interrogating the Guantanamo prisoner Omar Khadr after the Canadian Supreme Court ordered the release of the tapes. On the campaign trail, Senator John McCain's staffers are being accused of racial profiling after ordering an African-American reporter to leave the media area outside McCain's bus. Stephen Price of the Tallahassee Democrat was removed during a McCain stop in Florida. A McCain spokesperson says Price was told to leave because the area was reserved for national reporters. But Price says several journalists from other local papers were allowed to remain. And today marks the 63rd anniversary of the U.S. atomic bombing of Hiroshima. An estimated 140,000 people were killed instantly or died within a few months after the bombing. 3 days later, another U.S. airplane dropped a plutonium bomb on the city of Nagasaki, killing about 80,000 people. Earlier today, some 45,000 people gathered and stood in silent prayer at 8:45 a.m. Japan time, the exact moment the bomb dropped in 1945.
Thank you. above the target with the equivalent force of 20,000 tons of TNT.
Enola Gay by Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, remixed by Sash. Enola Gay was the name of the plane, named by its pilot, Paul Tibbetts, for his mother, Enola Gay. The name of the bomb was Little Boy. The bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, August 6, 1945, the first atomic bomb dropped in history. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As the wars drag on in Iraq and Afghanistan, the U.S. military is increasingly desperate to get recruits. A story involving an Army recruiter in Texas last week has now led to a bipartisan call for an investigation. The recruiter from the Greens Point recruiting station in Houston was suspended last week after a recording of his threats aired on a local CBS affiliate, KHOU. The recruiter, Sergeant Glenn Marquette, warned 18-year-old Irving Gonzalez that he would be sent to jail if he decided to go to college instead of joining the military, even though Gonzalez had signed a non-binding contract that left him free to change his mind before basic training. Republican Congressmember Ted Poe told the CBS affiliate that, quote, "We don't want the government, military, the Army deceiving American citizens," and suggested that Congress might have to get involved if the Army did not react to the incident. Last year, Irving Gonzalez and Eric Martinez signed up for the non-binding delayed enlistment program in high school. But earlier this summer, when 17-year-old Eric Martinez told his recruiters he decided to go to college instead of the military, his mother was told Eric had no choice and could face jail time if he resisted joining. Irving Gonzalez helped get Eric out of enlistment hours before he was to be shipped out of Houston for training. He knew he was next in line. He decided to record his next conversation with his recruiters. This is a part of what Sergeant Marquette told Irving Gonzalez in that recorded conversation.
The main thing is, I don't want to be in it. I don't want to go to the Army.
Well, you need to talk to my company commander.
Your company commander?
You need to come in here, and I need to bring you to my company commander.
But is there a way out? Is there a way for me to get out? Because I don't want to go in there if you're just going to, like...
No, there's not a way out. I mean, you sign a binding contract.
There's no way out.
No. When you sign a contract,
but I thought if you were able to get scholarships...
You need a full-ride scholarship, Sarge. Full-ride to a state university, UT, A&M, full-ride. That means everything is paid for. Classes, books, your lodging, your breakfast, lunch, and dinner. All paid for. Not no partial scholarship, not no FAA scholarship, not no First Citizens Bank scholarship. No. I'm talking full-ride scholarship, because there ain't no partial scholarship out there that even comes close to the Army, with the Army giving you for college, $40,000+.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it's kind of like a family thing, so I'd rather just stay here. What if I just don't show up?
Then guess what? You're AWOL, absence without leave. Punishable under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 86, deserter. It's in your contract. Read it. Clear as day. So then guess what happens?
What's that?
Guess what happens? Well, guess what happens to you? I tell you what happens to you, okay? This is what will happen. You want to go to school, you will not get no loans, because all college loans are federal and government loans. So you'll be blackballed from that. As soon as you get pulled over for a speeding ticket or anything with the law, they're going to see that you're a deserter. Then they're going to apprehend you, take you to jail. They're going to call the military police, the nearest military installation, and they will come down there, correctional officers, a 31 series in the Army, pick you up detain you, put you on a plane, and take you to Florida, Missouri, where you will do your time as a deserter. So guess what? All that lovey-dovey, I want to go to college and all this, guess what? You just throw it out the window because you just screwed your life. There's a right way to do things, and there's a wrong way to do things.
Okay.
Well, I mean, when should I come there?
Do you get into basic training and you don't like it? Cold chop and you don't like it? That's the right way to get out of the Army. Then they'll process you out of the Army on the failure to adapt, and it's nothing against your record.
And that'll be the right way to do it?
Yeah, and you can come back home and do your thing. And then also, guess what? If you do it that way, maybe later on in the future, you may say, well, damn, I'm coming to join the Army this time. And guess what? You can. You can join then, because you got out of the Army the right way. You at least got to go to basic training and try it.
U.S. Army recruiter Sergeant Glenn Marquette threatening 18-year-old Irving Gonzalez. Gonzalez and Eric Martinez now are joining us from Houston, Texas. We're also joined in Houston by Democratic Congressmember Jean Green, who is calling on the Department of Defense to look into the incident, and by community organizer Maureen Havel. She's the founder of Not Even One, a website to disseminate information and take action against illegal military recruiting practices. Douglas Smith is also on the phone with us. He's the public affairs officer at the U.S. Military Recruiting Command, joining us on the phone from Louisville, Kentucky. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Irving Gonzalez, I'd like to start with you. You had this conversation with the Army recruiter. Explain how this all came about, beginning actually with Eric being threatened.
Well, it started around a year ago. I was still 17, and when I got in, Eric was already thinking about it before I was. But, you know, right after I got in, like 2 weeks later, he decided to go ahead and join the DEFS program, too. And from there, that's how it started. And, I mean, we didn't think it was going to get this far, but they started, for a while, whenever we were thinking about not joining, they started calling us and telling us that we didn't have a choice, you know, that we could say all we want is we don't have a choice to go or not, if we want to or not.
Eric, if you could explain how far this went. First of all, how did you meet the military recruiter? Talk about what you understood, what you signed, and how eventually you end up basically escaping from a hotel.
Well, I met her at Irving's house because the day he went to go enlist for the DEP, I was at his house, and I talked to her and told her that I was interested in the military. And then she's like, well, what branch? I wasn't too sure yet. And she talked to me about it. And I was like, okay, well, let me get back to you on that. And it took me about 2 weeks before I decided to actually join the DEP. And
DEP means Delayed Enlistment Program?
Yes. And from what I understood is that it's just there so you can save a spot. So, you know, you can have the job you want as soon as you get there, and so you won't have a problem with it later on. And then as things went farther, I decided not to go. And when I told her that, she said I had no choice and that I had to go. So I believed her, and I went to the hotel. They took me to the hotel, and that's whenever Irving's little brother contacted me, and then
the hotel was preparing to leave?
Well, they keep you at the hotel until the morning, and from in the morning you go down to the office and you do a few more tests, and then you from there you leave to the fort you're supposed to go to.
Did they approach your family, like your mother?
Well, yeah, whenever I didn't want to go, my mom's like, okay, well, then just go stay at your sister's house and we'll tell them you left San Antonio. And I was like, okay, well, we did that. And, you know, my shipment date came and my recruiter went to my house, and my mom's like, well, he left to San Antonio. And she's like, well, you got to tell us where, give us an address so we can go pick him up. And my mom's like, well, he don't want to go. What don't you understand about that? And then she told her that I signed a binding contract and that I had to go. So my mom was like, well, let's go talk to your boss. I'll meet you down at your office. So my mom went, and she talked to Sergeant Marquette and told him that I didn't want to go, and that's it. And Marquette said that I had to go, and if I didn't, that I'd have a warrant for my arrest, and I wouldn't be able to get no government loans or nothing like that. So my mom doesn't really know anything about it, so she believed it, and she told me, and I believed it too, because I didn't know much about it either. So they extended my time until that Friday, and then Thursday they went to get me to so I can go to the hotel.
We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll find out what happened at the hotel and find out about Irving's brother who called you, and then what Irving did about this. Irving Gonzalez himself recruited. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. We'll also speak with a counter-recruiting activist whose husband served in Iraq, and we'll talk to a U.S. Congress member who's calling for an investigation, as well as a U.S. Army recruiting command spokesperson who will join us from Kentucky. Stay with us.
Two planes are flying across the country now. New York's so pretty in the fall. Hey, Mike, look out, but Mac calls back.
Singing 19 Miles to Baghdad, singing in her hometown of Columbia, Missouri. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Our guests are joining us in Houston, Texas, Irving Gonzalez and Eric Martinez. Irving is 18, Eric 17. They were both recruited. We're going to go to finish their story, then talk with the other guests from Texas and Kentucky. Irving Gonzalez, once Eric went to the hotel, how did your little brother get involved?
Well, I talked to Eric on the Wednesday before anything happened, and I told him that he wasn't going to have to go. But I didn't keep in contact with him that morning or that afternoon, and around nighttime, like around 10 or 11, I told my brother, call Eric, see what he's doing. And when he called him, Eric just seemed like really low-pitched voice. He didn't tell us. It took him a while until he finally told us that he was already at the hotel, and he didn't want to tell nobody by because he was just going to get sad. So we're like, you're at the hotel, and we're like, you don't have to go. I don't know why you think you need to go. You don't need to go. And Eric was like, no, I need to go, and you're going to need to go, too. They're going to go get you, too. This isn't a game. You can't play with them. And I was like, well, just hold on. I'll call you back. And that's when I decided to call Marine and Dwight, and I told them about the situation. And they started helping us by contacting anti-recruiters. I mean, from Washington and people that know more information about it to talk to Eric, because he was kind of like in a state of not knowing who to trust. And we put him on three-way and we talked to him, and finally we were able to get everything straight, you know, where will be good and we should go get him and stuff. So Eric was like, okay, come pick me up. But Eric didn't know where he was at. They just dropped him off he just knew he was at a hotel. He looks out the window. He said all he saw was an Olive Garden. So, I mean, that's the only thing we knew where to look for him at. And he finally called downstairs, the main office, and they told him the address. And it was like an hour away from our house, and to an area I had never been to in Houston. But finally, we went down there. And when we went down there, we saw that there was security going around the hotel, plus there was maybe like 10 recruiters in the main office downstairs. And he was in the second floor because when we got there, he was already in the balcony looking at us. It took us a while thinking about how we were going to get him out, because I was actually thinking of just walking in and seeing what would happen. But it was just too many recruiters. I was like, nah, we're going to have to find another way because they're going to ask me questions. And it took us a while. And I mean, the elevator didn't want to go down. They had a program to where, like, if you were on the second floor, you couldn't go down unless someone came up to get you. And he was actually thinking about jumping out the window. He actually climbed down to the first floor and he was going to jump from there. But there was tubing sticking up and it was just not going to be safe. That was like the last resort or something. And my friend Junior, he was with us. It was me, my brother Ivan, and Junior, and we were in the car. And he just decided to say, "Well, what about if I just walk in and try to get him out?" And he put on his iPod and he walked in. And they were trying to catch his attention. They were screaming, trying to see who he was. Like, "Hey, come here!" And he just kept walking. And he walked straight into the elevator. And when he got to the second floor, he held the door open so Eric could go in. And Eric was hiding on the second floor because there was recruiters and security walking around the second floor also. So when he got in the elevator, they went down and they went out through the back exit where we met him at. And that's whenever we're like, "Okay, well, he's out. Let's go home." But we were completely lost. So it took us a while to get home. But he was like an hour away, maybe less than an hour from them actually taking him to the office to get everything taken care of. It was like three in the morning, four in the morning, to where we actually got everything done and got him out of there.
Eric Martinez, were you scared?
Yeah, because they put you in a place where you're doing something you don't want to, and you just start thinking about everything that's over there and everything you hear on the news. So yeah, I was scared.
Why did you change your mind?
It's just mostly like what I want to do. I know that I don't have to go to the Army to do it. And it's, I don't know, it's just the stuff on the news. And I have people that we know that been there, people we know that have relatives or people that have gone there that just come back really, really messed up, either physically or emotionally.
I'd like to go to Democratic Congressmember Jean Green. You represent Houston in the U.S. Congress. What Irving and Eric are describing, it sounds like they're escaping from kidnappers, but this is the U.S. military. What is the legality of this? Eric is 17 years old. He is a kid. He's a minor.
Well, you know, this is not something that as a member of Congress, I want to hear about, because it's not something that should be done. I represent the area where these young men went to high school. My children went to that high school, and my wife taught there for many years. Texas and Harris County has a great recruitment record. I would hope we could recruit these young men and women without having to play games on them, keep them in some type of solitary confinement while we're waiting to ship them off to somewhere. You know, the non-binding contract is a bottom line. If they signed with the ability to change their mind later on, that should be the bottom line, not that they play games with them. And that's not what the military or the U.S. government should be proud of doing. And this is the second time something like this has happened at that particular recruiting station. And I have an office right close to that station. And I'd like the Department of Defense to say, "Wait a minute. Let's do recruiting honestly. Hopefully this is not happening in other parts of the country. But if it isn't, then why is it happening at this one location?"
Let's bring Douglas Smith in, public affairs officer for the U.S. Army Recruiting Command, talking to us from Louisville, Kentucky. As you listen to this description by these two young men and what happened to Eric being brought to this hotel and the conversation, the recorded conversation with the recruiter threatening Irving, saying he'll go to jail if he doesn't go into the military, what are your thoughts?
Well, I can't comment specifically on what they've said, because the Army Recruiting Command is investigating their allegations against the recruiter. The recruiter has been removed from the recruiting station pending the investigation. All I can tell you is that we do have procedures in place for future soldiers who want to be released from their contract. The procedures are going to involve them having to speak to their recruiter, explain their reasons for wanting to be released from the contract. At that point, the recruiter is probably going to try his or her best to remind them of all the good reasons that they chose to enlist in the Army. But ultimately, the recruiter is expected to provide them information on what the procedures are to request in writing to be released from the contract, followed up by an interview with the recruiting company commander, and ultimately approval of their request by the lieutenant colonel, who would be the commanding officer of the recruiting battalion that the station and the company belong to.
Maureen Haver, you're founder of Not Even One, noteven1.org. Your husband served in Iraq. He was involved in freeing Eric from the hotel. Can you talk about these practices in Texas as you understand them?
Sure, and I want to make a clarification. Earlier, I was referred to as a counter-recruitment activist, and it's really a matter of truth and recruitment. If you want to join the military, that is your right and prerogative. In the same manner, if you don't want to join the military, it is also your right and prerogative not to join the military. And what's happening is with the delayed enlistment program contract, it doesn't clearly explain to the young men and women who sign up for the DEP contract what their actual rights are in terms of requesting separation. It doesn't explain that at all. And Ted Poe actually indicated in his interview with CBS that the DEP contract needs to be rewritten.
I want to explain that Ted Poe is a Republican congressman from Texas.
Yes. And this is really a bipartisan issue because this is about, are we going to be lying to teenage kids about joining the military? This should be a concern for everybody. But going back to your question that's specifically looking at the situation in Houston and in Texas, Congressman Green referenced that this has happened before at this recruitment station. It happened in 2005, where a recruiter made a threat that was caught on voicemail, where he told a young man that if he didn't show up for an appointment, he was going to issue a federal warrant. The Army issued a national stand down of recruitment offices and promised that this was going to be fixed. And what CBS uncovered months after the initial story broke in 2005 was that Sergeant Kelt, the recruiter in question who had caused the national stand down, was actually promoted to supervisor at another office. This to me indicates that behavior like this is being rewarded. There's also evidence from a 2006 GAO study that shows that allegations of abuse have increased from 4,400 cases to 6,500 cases. And that's with the latest information that we have from the GAO, and this is nationwide. So we're looking at a systemic problem that's taking place. It's unusual that we've had two national stories coming out of Greens Point Recruitment Station, but I think the evidence in the GAO study in 2006 indicates that this is a widespread problem that's taking place throughout the country.
I want to go to that recruiter you just mentioned. This is from 3 years ago, from the same recruiting station in Houston, as you said, Greens Point Recruiting Station. This is the message that Sergeant Kelt, Thomas Kelt, left for a high school student in 2005.
Hey, Chris, this is Sergeant Kelt, the Army, man. I think we got disconnected, okay? I know you're on your cell probably, and you just had bad reception connection or something like that. I know you didn't hang up on me. Anyway, by federal law, you got an appointment with me at 2 o'clock this afternoon at Greens Point Mall, okay? That's the Greens Point Mall Army Recruiting Station at 2 o'clock. Fail to appear, and we'll have a warrant, okay? So give me a call back.
That was Sergeant Kelt. Douglas Smith, your spokesperson for the U.S. Army Recruiting Command in Kentucky. He said they're going to have a warrant out for his arrest if he doesn't show up. Is that improper?
Yes, it is. Our regulations are quite clear that recruiters are not to coerce or threaten applicants or future soldiers in any way.
The military removed him, but it turns out he was just moved to another recruiting station, and he was actually promoted. Is that the policy of the military?
Well, I'm hampered by privacy restrictions. All I can tell you that an administrative action was taken against Sergeant Kelt, and that administrative action was a negative action. However, the finding was that he had an otherwise stellar career as a soldier and as a recruiter, and he was given additional responsibilities as a recruiting station commander, which he continues to do so today. Just because someone has done something wrong doesn't mean that they get the death penalty.
Well, there's a difference between the death penalty and a promotion. He was actually promoted after this and came to be the commander of another recruiting station.
Yes.
What was the negative penalty if he was promoted?
I'm not allowed to tell you. I'm sorry, that's covered under the Army regulations and Department of Defense regulations. I cannot discuss administrative actions taken against a recruiter.
Congressman Gene Green, your thoughts?
Well, that's why we need the Armed Services Committee of the House of Representatives to do an investigation. The GAO study pointed this out 2 years ago, and it seems like there is a problem within the Department of Defense. The American people in Congress many years ago went to an all-volunteer army. That's what we're having. And we need to make it work instead of the subterfuge and the playing games and trying to get young men and women to join. We want them to join. And like I said, Texas and Harris County has a great recruitment record, Texas particularly compared to other states, of folks serving in our military. But I want them to be willing to go and willing to serve. There are a great many benefits, education-wise, for folks who serve in the military, and Congress just enacted a new GI Bill to do that. But we need to sell the positive side, and these games that are being played, one, puts a black eye on the military, and I would hope that we don't have a whole lot of our young men and women who are serving who are actually tricked into serving. We don't have a draft. We don't play games. If you want to go, you can go, and here are the benefits, and here's your responsibility. Don't put them in a hotel and guard them. Don't threaten to put them that you're going to send a warrant out. I don't know if a sergeant has the authority to issue a warrant. Frankly, members of Congress can't issue a warrant for someone. So, you know, this is a hard sell that at the very least, and it shouldn't be allowed.
And, Amy, the GAO study—
Maureen Haver, again, founder of NotEvenOne.org.
The GAO study that we're referencing in 2006 is the latest study that's been made available. And even within that study, they cited a Department of Defense internal survey of recruiters that stated that 20% of active recruiters felt that recruiter irregularities happened frequently. And irregularities are defined as willful acts of omission and improprieties. So when we have even 20% of active recruiters are saying that this is happening frequently, we need a response. And I think it's clear that the Department of Defense is not responding to these issues.
Douglas Smith, your response to what Maureen Haver is saying, and also the pressure the military is facing right now, with fewer people wanting to go and the quotas that these recruiters have to meet every month.
Well, first of all, I'd like to remind everyone that I'm a spokesperson for U.S. Army Recruiting Command and not the other services. We have more than 8,300 Army recruiters across the country who are working day in and day out within the regulations that we expect them to work and living up to their Army values. We take it very seriously, all of us, when even one recruiter is accused of doing something improper. We investigate and take appropriate actions as necessary. We don't take this lightly. We do have annual training. Recruiters get annual training on the ethics of recruiting each year. That follows up on the training they get when they go to the recruiting and retention school, and it builds upon training that they receive throughout the year at their company level. We've made it quite clear that we take these things seriously, and we investigate as when we learn of a problem, which is what we're doing right now in Houston.
An Army investigator contacted Irving once, and Irving was unable to meet with the Army investigator. The Army investigator said that he would come back the next day to talk to Irving. I don't think, Irving, that you've heard from the Army investigator since then, have you?
No. I haven't heard from them. That was the only time.
And I don't believe Eric's been contacted at all.
Well, I'd like
let me,
to
let me see.
Go ahead, well, Congressman Green.
Well, what I'd like to say is it sounds like it's not an isolated incident, whether it was in 05 or this year. And if you have some type of semi-prison system where you're keeping people at hotels, that sounds like it's more systemic. It's a problem with the system instead of just with individual recruiters.
We're going to go to break and then come back to continue this conversation. We're going to play another clip of a conversation that Irving Gonzalez had with the person who first recruited him and find out about the increasing number of incidents reported of recruiter irregularities and the question of illegality and investigation. This is Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. Singing I Ain't Marching Anymore. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The person who actually recruited Irving Gonzalez and Eric Martinez was Corporal Lisette Diaz. I want to play an excerpt of her conversation with Irving Gonzalez when he told her that he changed his mind about joining. This is a Democracy Now! Exclusive.
Have you talked to Eric?
No, but his mom told me.
Yeah, he needs, you know, you don't want whatever's going to happen to him to happen to you.
What's going to happen?
You don't, well, I don't know. I mean, whatever, if he ever says, if he ever gets pulled over or whatever, and then look up the stuff, you never know what can happen.
Yeah, I think I could do better with my life out here than in there.
Do you think so? The way the economy is going right now?
Really? Oh, they're sure going to be free.
That's your best interest. What's that?
$15 struggle.
You rather struggle? Are you serious? Think about what you're saying. The way the economy is going right now and the way it's going to go in the next couple of years, it's not looking good. You really need us? Huh?
No.
Sometimes you have to grow up and learn how to be a man and take care of stuff on your own. You know what I'm saying? You want to sit there and live with your mom for the next 4, 5, 6 years or whatever? You know, you want to do something different than what your friends are doing. Because when you come back and you see what your friends are doing, still living at home with mom and dad, struggling, trying to make a job, make money, make a living, you're going to be like, damn, I'm glad I did this. You know what I'm saying? I'm telling you from experience. Because I see that. So now, you know, you got about a month left before you leave. You got just a little less than a month. And if you go to basic training and you still don't like it, it's easier getting out of it. Like once you're in basic training, all you gotta do is go and talk to the chaplain. So I don't want this. I want to go home. Then you're home. They don't have time. They'll sleep. And all day. They got soldiers to train.
That was the recruiter, Lisette Diaz, attempting to recruit Irving Gonzalez. Douglas Smith, public affairs officer for the U.S. Army Recruiting Command, I wanted to ask you, is it true? Is it true what she says, that it's easier to leave after basic training than not to go at all?
No, leaving from basic training is more difficult than asking for release from the Future Soldier Training Program.
So is the recruiter, Lisette Diaz, lying to Irving?
I can't comment on that recording. The matter is under investigation.
Irving Gonzalez, when you heard this, what did you decide to do? What gave you the strength to think that you wouldn't be punished if you didn't go?
Well, Dwight and Marine, they were helping me a lot with the information, you know, telling me that if, helping me find more information, because I wasn't even, I was taking their word too, but I was looking it on the internet, you know, people that this has happened to and stuff. And whenever I had my conversation with Diaz, it was another conversation that I had with her. I told her, is there anything I could do? You know, can you help me not go? And she's like, no, you need to go. There's nothing you could do, you're gonna need to go. And at that point, I was like, I'm just a number to her, you know? If she don't care about me going, why should I, you know, care about her meeting her quota or anything like that? So I started feeling that it wasn't as important me going as they were making it seem. I mean, they just wanted just that one more person. Because even when I talked to, whenever we did the recording for Glenn Marquette, I told him my name, but it didn't seem like he was actually interested in my name. He was just saying that I was a future soldier and that I was thinking of not going. So it felt like he was basically like reading it off of a script, what he was saying, because he didn't even care what my name was. He just knew I was a future soldier.
Douglas Smith, public affairs officer for the U.S. Army Recruiting Command in Kentucky. You said that the military, the Army, is dealing with this. But it turns out, and I'm looking at the CBS figures, instead of going down, allegations of wrongdoing are going up year after year. In 2005, 836 complaints filed against recruiters. That rose to 874 last year. The Army is on pace to surpass that figure in 2008. What's more, the number of Army recruiters given formal admonishments has nearly doubled since the first report of 3 years ago of CBS, with 373 citations going up to 635. Are things getting worse because recruiters are getting more desperate to meet these quotas?
No, things are not getting worse based on recruiters needing to make quotas. We have achieved our national recruiting goals every year, 2006 and 2007, and we're on track to achieve our goals again this year in fiscal year 2008.
Then why are things getting worse? Why are these incidents going up and up? And, of course, these are only the ones that get reported. We didn't talk today about the numerous allegations of sexual abuse. AP did some stunning work on that, an expose that we did another show on.
Well, allegations of recruiters are lower than in previous years. It is true in stating that they were up from fiscal year 05 through fiscal year 07. The number of recruiters who were found to have committed an impropriety, that is, doing something that they shouldn't, has been relatively stable over the past few years. The number of recruiters being admonished is a sign of the fact that we're taking this very seriously. An admonishment is a negative action taken against a recruiter, whether or not we found that the allegation was substantiated. We admonish recruiters even when we can find no proof that they did something wrong. If we see that they may have skirted the regulation, they may have made a mistake.
I think the problem with the public hearing that, when you say it's encouraging to hear that the admonishments have gone up, is that Sergeant Kelt was admonished and he was promoted. We don't know what the admonishment was. We just know he's been made commander of a recruiting center.
Well, I don't know of any organization where an admonishment, depending on what the finding was, would necessarily result in the person being fired from their job.
Not necessarily fired,
but the level of admonishment must meet the
right, but not fired, not fired, but promoted.
Same thing.
Maureen Haver, you have a question for Douglas Smith.
Well, I don't know of too many other organizations that are recruiting teenagers to go and fight in a war. And this also represents a liability to the troops that are over there. If you have an apathetic soldier or an unwilling soldier, that's a liability to the entire operation over there in Iraq. So we're dealing with what's happening in Iraq, in Afghanistan, what's happening to the veterans afterward, and his comment that it's going, that the numbers are looking good and that's being admonished. Again, we're going back to the GAO study that found that the data that they examined likely underestimates the true number of recruiter irregularities. And they further found that the Department of Defense has no oversight framework that requires branches of the military to maintain and report on recruiter abuses, nor is there a common criteria for categorizing abuses or establishing shared terminology so abuses can be terminized as recruiter error in the Army or malpractice in the Navy, making it difficult to both assign responsibility for and to quantify abuse. Representative Green made the comment earlier that we have an all-volunteer force. This instance and all the other instances that we're seeing throughout the country call into question that very basic assumption. We don't know how many have listened to what the recruiter said who requested separation from the delayed enlistment program and are now serving in Iraq, have died in Iraq, or are injured or emotionally scarred. And it's not acceptable for this to happen to one person, and I don't see any clear oversight framework that shows that the Department of Defense is dealing with this or that the individual military branches are dealing with this, because everything is being kept secret. There's no transparency, and that's why we need Congress to get involved, because this also links to taxpayer dollars, and one of the powers invested in Congress and responsibility is to maintain the military.
The ACLU came out with a report in May. It says that the United States has failed to uphold its commitments to safeguard the rights of youth under 18 from military recruitment. And the report goes on to say the military regularly targets youth under 18 for recruitment and disproportionately targets poor and minority students. Maureen Haver, in Houston, with the work that you've been doing, who is being targeted? Where are the recruiters? And I do want to ask both you and Douglas Smith how you feel about videotapes in the recruiting stations of all stations.
Well, in Houston, Aldine High School, for example, is in the northern part of Houston, and 70% of the students who attend Aldine High School are eligible for free or reduced-price lunch. 71% of the student population is Hispanic. So if we're looking at the ACLU study that you just referenced, Aldine High School seems to fit that profile. Another reason why Congress needs to get involved is this also links to the No Child Left Behind Act, which was passed in 2001, and which will withhold federal funding from school districts who don't allow military recruiters access. And at one point, Irving mentioned that the recruiters, after he told them that he didn't want to go, they came into his classroom and harassed him in his classroom. This is a clear violation of students' rights to privacy, right to be left alone, and it has to stop. Wait,
explain that last point. They came into the classroom?
Irving, why don't...
Irving Gonzalez. What class were you in, and who came in?
They were already waiting for me in class. It was theater. I think it was theater arts, and they were already in the class. And I was going into the class, and as soon as I walked in, I was like, "Ah, they're gonna mess with me." So I was kind of like, "Let me just sit down and, you know, mind my business. Hopefully they don't talk to me." So I started talking to my friend, and we're both talking, and they're like on the other side of the room. And in the classroom, the chairs aren't aligned like right next to each other. They go around the class like a circle. So whenever she was like, "Private Gonzalez," and I looked at her, everybody was just like shocked, and they looked at me, and then they looked back at her, and she's like, she gave me a signal like to come over, to go over there towards her, you know, that she wanted to talk to me. And I didn't get up. And when I didn't get up, they like came to my chair and they got in my face and they're like, "Can I see you outside?" And at this point, everybody in the classroom's kind of like shocked, like, "What's going on? You know, why are they doing this?" And I was like, "No, I'm in class. I'm not going to leave my class." So they asked my teacher, "Can I talk to Irving outside privately?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, you could take him outside." So they took me outside, and outside she was just like, "Why don't you want to go?" And, "No, you need to go," and all this. And I was like, "Well, no, I'm not going to go. You know, that's, I feel that I could do better here." And she's like, "No, you can't college is hard, and she was just trying to relate to me, but at the same time trying to scare me into saying.
This is Congressman Jean Green. Does this sound irregular to you that Irving Gonzalez is in his high school class and he is being recruited in the classroom?
Well, for one thing, you know, in Texas we have laws that when you're in a given class, whether it's theater, art, or science, or math, you're supposed to be in that class. There are exceptions. And I know the federal law encourages, as much as it can, recruiters having access to schools. But there's also a level of that. Sure, I want them to recruit in high school to give young people the opportunity. But I also don't want them to go to take them out of class and harass them to the point where saying, you know, you have to go when you sign a non-binding contract. If that contract is non-binding, that's what it means. And you really shouldn't be taken out of your class, whether it's theater arts or any other class, that to do that. They ought to visit them if they have to at home or get them to come into a recruiting station. But again, if you're unwilling to go, there's only a certain level of encouragement that you should have to go through from the recruiter. And that's where we need to find out, where is this happening in the chain of command? If it's not just at, thank goodness it's not just at the Greens Point station, because that's in our district. But I want to know, why is that happening?
Douglas Smith, does this sound irregular to you that the recruiters are in the classroom calling the students out?
Well, what the recruiters do in the school is subject to the regulations and guidelines that the schools establish. We want to be good guests in the high schools, but that varies from location to location. All I can tell you is that we expect our recruiters to abide by the regulations established by the schools they're working with.
I want to end with our two student guests, high school students who have said no to the military. Eric Martinez, what are your plans now, and what do you have to say to other young people? Do you know other young people in your situation?
Well, I already had a few friends that did sign up for the DEP, and they already left, but that's because they wanted to. And all I really have to say to them other people is just, you don't have to go if you don't want to. Just stay informed about what you can do and what are the ways of getting out.
And Irving?
Well, in my school, I feel that there's more than just the recruiters asking for kids' information, but they're harassing them in lunch and their classes and putting them on the spots in the hallways, just trying to find a way to get to them and for them to actually start talking to them more. And a lot of families around my area, around the Alden area, they're not informed about this. A lot of parents don't know about this information. So they're kind of lost in the whole procedure of the military. And we want to inform as many people as we can that if you want to go, okay, that's all good. But if you decide that there might be something else you could do, that there is something else, that there is that opportunity for you to get out.
I want to thank you all for being with us. Irving Gonzalez and Eric Martinez from Aldine High School. Maureen Haver, founder of NotEvenOne.org. Democratic Congressmember Jean Green, who's calling for an investigation into recruiting practices. And Douglas Smith, public affairs officer for the U.S. Army Recruiting Command in Louisville, Kentucky. That does it for today's broadcast. If you'd like a copy of the show, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire. Producer Monta Angeli Comet. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.